Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the Elijah Winfrey Show. I'm your host, Elijah Winfrey, joined each week by my fabulous, wonderful, and super talented co-host, Tony Boucher. We have a tremendous show lined up for you today. Our guest today is a really good friend of mine. I've coached him, mentored him a bit. He's a great golfer. Miles Vail, I hope I said his last name right. I'm sure he'll correct me if I didn't, but Miles will be with us momentarily. And he's going to talk a little bit about the first tee of Greater Seattle, how he got started in that. He currently attends UNLV. He's been a part of High Tee Golf for a while now. And we're going to have a little spirited debate toward the end of our interview here about Michael Jordan and LeBron James. You know, I kind of know where he stands, but to have him live on the air, you know, where thousands of listeners can hear him kind of vouch for LeBron, it's going to be fun. So we'll get him on the show momentarily. But before we do that, let's get you caught up on our past weekend. And Tony, how was your weekend? What did you get done? What fun things did you do?
Yeah, so my weekend was good, but I got to say, you brought up this whole spirited debate, and now anything I was going to say has gone out the window. I'm really curious how this is going to go today. But it was good. I spent time with Adrian. I actually, you know, I had the opportunity this weekend to spend time with my daughter, and that's a rarity because she's so busy with, you know, with college and work. And so I really enjoyed getting some time with her and, of course, just doing my men's group and my women's group. That's, you know, that's a regular for me on the weekends. So I'll keep it short for today. How about you, Eli?
You know, my weekend was really good, pretty decent. I'm still going through that, you know, that process of not playing, you know, tournament golf anymore and kind of transitioning into a different life, if you will. I was honored at the High Tee Golf Junior Golf event this past weekend, where they gave me a nice certificate for coaching, you know, the group. And it always makes me feel good when that happens. You know, the students there are outstanding. They really put in the time and the work that it takes to be successful on the golf course and off the golf course. You know, they listen really well. And, you know, like I always tell them, you know, listen, I can tell you everything that I know knowledge-wise to get you to where you want to go, or at least get you started. It's up to you to kind of listen to it and either accept it and use it or not. And, you know, they take what I say and they really use it, and they've accomplished some great things. So it was great to wrap up there. Now, I'll still continue to coach. That's something that I don't think I'll let go of. I love inspiring and motivating, you know, the youth to do better and, you know, kind of setting the next generation up to succeed. So I'll continue to do that. I'll be doing some school shopping this week for a local elementary school. So over the weekend, you know, I've been able to kind of jot down some school supplies that they will need. And, you know, I hope to build off of that. So I think I'm starting to transition, Tony, a bit more into my nonprofit. And I know it's going to take time. You know, it's that, you know, when you give up something that you really love, you know, to do something else that you really love, I didn't think it would be very difficult, but it's turning out to be pretty difficult. And so this is a process that I continue to work through, that I work through the weekend, and I'm sure it'll continue on until I feel that I'm pretty comfortable in my surroundings and what I want to do. So that was my weekend. Spent time with family. That was great. That was good. It's always fun to laugh and you know, see the kiddo growing a bit, and he's excited about school. Something that, you know, as a kid I could never get up for, but, you know, he seems to be ready to go back. So great weekend had by all. So enough of us, Tony. Let's get into today's show. And our guest,
let's do that.
He's a great individual, and, You know, he's a great golfer, and I think we met, I want to say, at Riverbend Golf Complex years ago. And he was pretty, you know, I don't know if shy is the right word, but, you know, he was kind of observing everybody and kind of, you know, checking out the scene. He was a part of the first Tee of Greater Seattle's program, I think, for a fair amount of time at that time. And so we met, we clicked, and it's always cool to hang out with him and chat with him when I can. Miles Vail joins the show. Miles, did I say your last name correct?
Not quite. It's Veal, but, I mean, it's close enough, so.
Okay. All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate that. So Miles, thanks for joining the show today, man. And, you know, I know this has been something that
thanks
you and I both talked about. We wanted to get you on the show, and, you know, you made it a point to remind me that, you know, you were getting ready to head back, you know, to college, and you really wanted to be on the show, and I definitely wanted to make that happen. So I'm glad that you're here. Now, talk to us a little bit about, you know, the first Tee of Seattle and how you got started in the program. I know that's how we met, but how did you get interested in golf and the first Tee?
That's a good question. I had moved around a lot as a kid due to my dad's job, and I actually got into the first Tee years ago. I think it was in Arizona, and I started there. And throughout all the times that I moved, each year each state we lived in, we decided that it was in my best interest to join the first Tee wherever I went. And so I joined the first Tee in Arizona, and then I joined the first Tee in Colorado, and then I joined the first Tee here in Seattle. And that's kind of like how you just said how we met. But I mean, the first Tee's been there for as long as I can remember. I've interned for them before. I've been a junior coach before. I've been a part of their program for the last couple of years. I graduated all the way up until I actually got to the highest point in the program, which is the ace level. And that was something I was really proud about. But that's basically how I got started with the first Tee and where it's gotten me now. So
that's awesome. So what's your favorite thing about the first Tee? What was it about the first Tee that you really liked?
I think just the camaraderie that they had, and everything that they taught. They taught the kids. They wanted the kids to succeed. They helped them when needed. You know, they taught them very valuable life skills. They also taught you the 9 core values: respect, integrity, just to name a few of them. I don't know all 9 off the top of my head, but yeah, I just like I said, I like the camaraderie that they had. They were always nice to me, even when I, you know, come back from college and I say hi to the people at Riverbend. They always know who I am. And like Kyle, I see Kyle a lot there. I used to be a coach with him. And Zach, he works there too. So whenever I get the chance to say hi to them, I always do, and they always remember me. So, like I said, just the camaraderie and what they teach.
Yeah, it's a great organization, and, you know, I love the program. And, you know, I also love High Tee, and you know, they're also an aspiring, growing program as well. And Patsy Hampton, who is very much involved with High Tee, has done a tremendous job and you know, facilitating, you know, the courses that the kids play on, and just the interaction that the students have. I really have enjoyed my time there. When did you get started in High Tee? Was High Tee? I'm assuming that it was after the first Tee, but when did you get involved with that?
So the funny thing about high tea was I originally was opposed to doing it, surprisingly. My dad came up to me one day and he was like, hey, I signed you up for this program called high tea. And it gives you an opportunity as a junior golfer to go out and play different courses and everything. I'm like, so you signed me up for something and you didn't ask me about it? Is that what I'm hearing? But I've been part of the high team now for the past, I think, 2.5, 3 years maybe. And I just want to say a quick shout out to Patsy, as you mentioned. She's always been there. She's very, very, very set on the kids going first. You know what I'm saying? Like the juniors, she makes sure all the juniors are taken care of. I didn't go to the Alan J. Bennett tournament this year. It was in Las Vegas because I had to work a tournament here in Washington. But like I said, she's been the cog in the machine that's been making the program run. And I also want to shout out my dad, too, because he just took over the role of the president of the club. And he's been doing a good job. He actually recruited you, Eli, as the coach. And I thought that was a good idea. But, yeah, I just love being a part of the high tea. I've already made a lot of friends, considering it's only two people, Angelise and Camellia.
Right.
I enjoy it a lot.
That's awesome. It's definitely gonna grow, and I, you know, I like the vision that, you know, they have and that they want to set for the program. I think it's always good to continue to reach out into communities where kids who maybe are interested in the game of golf, you know, want to learn, want to play, and maybe get better. Want to learn more core values and life skills. I think golf is more than just hitting the golf ball. It's also, you know, you're learning about yourself in a lot of ways. So kudos to the program. And, you know, I look forward to definitely being back and coaching again very, very soon. On another note, I know that you are attending UNLV out there in Las Vegas. And tell me a little bit about that experience. How has that been for you?
Yeah, that's another good question. UNLV, man, that's your. My experience my freshman year was pretty good. I learned a lot in terms of, you know, adulting and time management and making sure that you have your priorities straight. I made schedules and I tried to match it up with, you know, my daily life. I'm out there golfing a lot, which is a good thing, mainly because I'm in the professional golf management program. But yeah, the experience I had was pretty good. Passed all my classes except math. Math has always been a struggle for me, so I'm definitely gonna do something about trying to pass math next year, because if I don't pass it this year, it's going to be I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. I might be off track to graduate, but
right.
I love it down there. It was funny because I was originally I was committed to go to Washington State on a broadcast journalism major focusing in sports. And my mom and dad, my dad and I went up to Wazoo for a school tour, and it was nice and everything. But then we came back and we were like, yeah, I don't think this is the best fit, because my mom had mentioned that it was also a peer college town. There's nothing to do. There's basically the school and then, you know, the nearest, you know, strip mall, whatever you want to call it. They had little trinket shops and all that. And I was like, ah, this isn't for me. But my mom was the one who said that sports has been a part of my life since I was a little kid. And that was my gateway to, you know, try and make friends and build relationships, because I don't want to say shy, but I'm hesitant to start conversations with people I don't know. But she took the time, and we both took the time to do some more research, and we came across UNLV and the Professional Golf Management Program. And it was funny because my sister had a volleyball tournament around the same time they were having their open house for campus visits and all that. And we decided to go down there. We took a tour to the campus and the building that they just built, Hospitality Hall. We met with Kendall Murphy, Christopher Kane, and Brian, and not Brian, what was his name? I forgot his name, but we met with Kendall Murphy and Chris Kane down there, and I just fell in love with it from day one. Not to mention the weather's better there, and you know, the strip's right behind the school, so whenever I get free time, I'm over there living it up. So but yeah, my experience was good the first year, and I look forward to going back for my sophomore year and seeing where I can go from there.
I like it a lot. I like it a lot. Now, I'm going to let my co-host chime in here with maybe a question for you, and then we'll wrap up with a little spirited debate. So, Tony, any questions for our guest?
Thank you, Eli. I do have a question. So a lot of the young adults that I work with really struggle being successful at college. And Miles, I heard you talk about using a schedule, which I think is a great strategy. And I'm wondering what other advice you have for young people who are either going off to college for the first time, or maybe they've struggled their first and second semester and could really use some tips from you on how to be successful at school.
Was just make sure that you're on top of your schoolwork. You don't want to lose track of your schoolwork and your school responsibilities, because that's what you're there for in the end, is to get a degree. So you don't want to lose track of about that. Like I said, I use schedules a lot. Luckily my mom and dad were resources where I could call them and ask them any kind of questions I had about, you know, a class or a project. And, that was always a good thing to have. Another thing, that I also learned was you want to space your workout. So if you have, let's say a 10-page paper that's due in 3 weeks, you know, you should, I learned that you got to take time out of your day to at least write maybe like 2 to 3 pages a day, and then have somebody proofread it. And then, in the end, make sure it's a good piece that you're turning in, because the grading in college is a lot different, than high school. Granted, different colleges have different grading systems, but they grade a lot harder. And if you don't, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't follow the instructions, you know, pretty well, if you just turn in, you know, a mediocre paper or something like that, they will default you and will automatically give you a C or below. And that's something that I learned. And it was a kind of a wake-up call for me, but luckily I figured it out and did my work consistently.
That's great. Thank you.
Outstanding. Outstanding. You know, I really admire you, man, and I love hanging out with you and laughing and carrying on. Now, But before I let you go, you know, we got to talk about this Michael Jordan, LeBron James debate. You know where I stand, and I think Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player in the world ever. And you think LeBron, and for the life of me, I don't understand why you would think LeBron would be. I think it's because maybe, you've seen him from start to finish, kind of like how I've seen Jordan. But, I just don't know if LeBron's the best. How can you convince me and other listeners out there who feel that Michael Jordan is the best and LeBron is maybe second or maybe third best?
I mean, look, there's no debate that's needed to have. I mean, you look at LeBron's resume. I mean, what has he done for the league? I mean, he has never gotten injured, never gotten in trouble off the court. You know, he's always doing something off the court that's admirable. I mean, he opened a school, for Christ's sake, for little kids. I mean, what does Jordan do that LeBron hasn't done off the court? And on the court, don't even get me started on the court. I mean, yeah, Jordan got the 6 rings, but you look at what he had to play through back then and what LeBron has to play through now, it's like LeBron had to play through the Warriors.
Nothing.
Who had a 73-win team and then added Kevin Durant. How do you add Kevin Durant, who's a perennial all-star, perennial scorer, and still get to the finals 8 straight times and still beat them? And he came back from a 3-1 deficit in the NBA Finals, averaging a 40-point triple-double. It's like, what more does he have to do? Does he have to go 82-0 and then win the championship to prove that he's the best? I mean, look, he's top 5 all-time scoring, top 10 assists, top 10 rebounder, top 15 steals. It's like he probably will be number 1 scorer, number 1 assist leader in the history of the game by the time he's retired. It's like, he's almost averaging more points than Jordan in his career. You know, it's just the balance is in LeBron's favor right now. I don't get how you can disagree with LeBron and what he's done.
Yeah, you make a compelling argument. I'll just say, 6-0 in the finals. He could guard any position. He could shoot. He didn't complain when he got fouled. He didn't really flex, I can go on and on. But here's the thing, and I asked you this last weekend, and I said, if you needed one bucket with your life on the line, you needed one person to make the shot, would it be LeBron, Kobe, or Michael? And this is what you stopped, and you paused, remember? And I know when you know that I'm right, because you smile. You put your head down and you smile when you like you're doing right now when you know I'm right, and you wouldn't answer the question emphatically.
I say LeBron anytime. Yeah. Anytime.
Okay.
First of all, Kobe has the most misses of all time. Yeah, Kobe was clutch and everything, but half the shots Kobe took in the clutch were low percentage shots. And in my opinion, it was all luck that he made those shots in the clutch. There's no way that, he can do that all the time. And then Jordan, Jordan was clutch. I mean, he had that one shot over Cleveland to win the game, but that was all luck. And I showed you a video of two minutes and
you
30
did.
Seconds of LeBron just going crazy, shooting jump shots, layups to win the game. I don't understand. I mean, but like you said, one shot to save my life. I'm taking Bron all the way. No question about it.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna leave it at that. We will continue the debate at another time. This is to be continued. But I do want to thank you for being on the show today, man. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to hang out with us. I really admire your mom and dad and your sister. I really have the utmost respect for them. And I'm honored to call you friend. And anytime you want to come back on the show, Tony and I would love to have you back on. It's been a treat for us to listen to you today and listen
Absolutely.
To you share some wisdom about college and other things in your life. So thank you so much, man. And we'll be in touch this week for sure. I guarantee you that.
For sure. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was something that I always wanted to do since you had told me that you had a radio show. This is my first time really actually doing one, and it was a fun experience. One more thing I forgot to say in terms of college when Tony asked me was don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to go to your professors, what they call office hours, and get extra help. Don't be afraid to get a tutor if you're struggling in a class. Don't be afraid to go to your counselor or your advisor and tell them, hey, this class is too hard for me, or I'm not feeling comfortable, I don't know if I can pass. Just make sure that when you're in college, you want to be as comfortable as you can be. And yes, it's going to be hard. Yes, it's a grind, but you just want to make sure that you're comfortable in what you're doing and what you're studying. And if you don't, then you can change that. You can change what you're studying and then move on from there. But that was one big thing I forgot is to ask for help. And that's something that I don't think I took advantage of when I was struggling in math. I was like, I can do it. I'll get through it. I can do it. I'll get through it. But that wasn't the story. So I'll definitely be asking for help next year in terms of math. So, yeah.
Outstanding, man. Outstanding. Well, listen, have a great rest of your day, and we'll definitely be in touch. And thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And that sounds like a plan. And LeBron is still the undeniable GOAT. Don't forget.
Okay. Take care, Miles.
All right, bye, Miles.
Bye, Tony.
Oh, that was awesome, wasn't it? That was something else.
What a great young man. Oh, my goodness. Very thoughtful, very insightful. And he got the last word on that debate there, Eli.
He did, didn't he?
No question there. He slam dunked it at the end.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. And, I love the question that you asked. And you know, I love that he took time to really think about it. And, you know, and even at the end there where he said, oh, I forgot what Tony asked me, that I want to add one more thing. And this is what I wanted to add, you know. He's such an awesome guy.
Yeah, he really is. And his thoughts, you know, these are things, you know, for the folks, you know, that I work with, these are really valuable tips. You know, he talked about not waiting till the last minute, working a little bit, slowly and pacing yourself, and, you know, going out there and asking the questions, utilizing the resources, whether, you know, he relied on his mom and his dad, he talked about office hours, he talked about getting tutoring. There is a lot of support for college students. And, you know, so, and then using that schedule so that, you know, you could keep on top of knowing when your assignments are due and not just kind of leaving that to chance. And, you know, he's going to do great things because these are things that the folks I work with really struggle with, you know, going to call off to college for the first time. So really, really great advice for people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And let's segue to a few questions here, Tony, to wrap up the show. One of these questions are pertaining to last week's show, and it's from Monica in New Jersey. And she writes in, she says, this question is for Tony. On last week's show, Elijah said he erased everything on his social media accounts to start his next dream. I wanted to ask you if you have ever done something like this, and what are the benefits?
You know, I have. I've erased pictures or journals or records online. And I think it is, it can really be advantageous because if your brain and your life is so full of the past, I think it can get really muddy and crowded. And when you symbolically, you know, take a gesture like that, it really resets, reboots the brain to say, okay, I'm moving forward, without you getting, you know, caught up in the past. So there have been actually several times in my life where I have done that and found it to be definitely advantageous. It's not always easy. Sometimes I'll do that and have, like, you know, not bad regrets, but feel a sense of loss or something that isn't there anymore. And I know we talked about this offline, you know, that's definitely something you're going through, is that process of, you know, going through, you know, this kind of birthing into the new life that you're going to have and the loss of the old. But absolutely, and I think it's a great way to clear out when things get too confusing or muddled or, you know, just don't serve you now. It's a great strategy to try.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely difficult, and I figured, for me anyway, it was something that I needed to do, because, you know, when I start recalling things that I once did and was good at that no longer really apply to things that I want to do moving forward, not in a direct way, but it becomes difficult, because then I do go back and then I forget about, you know, the next chapter or the next goal that I set for myself to obtain when things get tough, you know. So, listen, everybody does it differently. You know, I'm not saying my way is the best way. I'm just saying, for me, I felt like it's like when you're done painting a picture, right? You need a new canvas to paint another picture, right? Your mind is evolving into something else and see something else to paint. So,
yeah, it's a great analogy. Yeah.
Let's take one more question from Patricia in Nebraska. Patricia writes in, why don't we hear more about girls on the spectrum? Is it because autism is more associated with boys and we just ignore the other side? That's a good question, Patricia. I don't think we ignore the other side. I think, Tony, you can answer this maybe more than I could, but I just think with girls, and I could be wrong, so please forgive me if I am. I feel like with girls, they're not diagnosed right away. It's always something else, or they're told that it's something else. As opposed to saying that, you know, they have autism. I know my niece is on the spectrum, and, you know, I don't know everything, you know, about how she was diagnosed, but I think the focus, they focus more on boys, I guess, because I don't know if you the signs are there right away, or there's a lot of inactivity. I'm not quite sure, but I don't think that we ignore the girls. I would love to see more advocating for women and for girls on the spectrum. Tony, I think you could best answer this question.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, girls who are on the spectrum, they look different than the boys. And all the tests and all the research that we did throughout the years was based on what autism looks like in a boy. And not just a boy, but a white boy. So there was no, like, we don't have any real culture in terms of the testing that we use to diagnose autism. We don't have a lot of variety in the group of people that were normed to decide what criteria is diagnosable. So the other piece about that is, though, girls actually really hide their autism very well. There's a lot of pressure from other girls, social pressure to fit in and behave, that for the most part, boys don't have so much of that.
Right.
Boys are a lot more free to kind of stand out or do things that are socially inappropriate, and that's more acceptable for a boy. The girls really kind of gang up on each other and say, oh, this is not the way we do things. They're much more socially oriented in how they group up and guide other girls. And so women learn very early to observe their environments and fake it. And so it shows up very differently in girls and women. And there's some research being done now, but, you know, I've spent a lot of my career, you know, looking in on how autism affects girls differently. And I've, you know, had some very, very, you know, insightful input from women on the spectrum at all different kinds of ages. And I think the important thing to take home here is that just because you cannot see the autism does not mean it's not there, for one, and for two, that person is not struggling. The struggle is just not something you see, and that's really important. So don't assume, you know, if you come across a girl or a woman who says she's on the spectrum, don't assume that it's just easy for her. You don't know
right.
what kinds of struggles it's taken for her to show up looking like she's put together. So
right.
it is very different. And I think that's a big piece of it. So, and a lot of,
absolutely.
I've had so many stories of women who, you know, have gotten autism diagnoses, and it was clear that they were just flat out not properly evaluated. Like, evaluators said, oh, well, you have a boyfriend or you make eye contact, so you can't be autistic. Well, that's just flat out not true. There are lots of people
right.
on the spectrum who make eye contact or have boyfriends or kids or, you know, or drive or whatever, and that does not exclude them from being autistic. So it's the struggles for women are different than for men because of that. So, but good question.
I completely agree with that. I really do. And the eye contact thing is, you know, I hear that a lot, and, you know, I'm glad you said that, because there are kids and adults on the spectrum who do make eye contact, you know.
Of course.
And
I know some
of
my clients who make better eye contact than I do because they were trained. I still don't make eye contact very well. I watch people's mouths, but you know what? Nobody ever really, like, I've learned that, you know, that strategy is what works for me. But I have some clients who make such amazing, perfect eye contact because they've been trained. They've learned. You know, being autistic doesn't mean you're an idiot. It just means you're wired differently. So you can learn to do a lot of things to fit in. You can learn, you know, strategies and coping skills. And when you do that, it makes you not look so autistic because you've learned how to fit in. But it doesn't mean
right.
that life isn't hard or that there aren't challenges when a person's learned how to fit in.
Absolutely. Well said. And I hope that answers your question there, Patricia. And with that, my friend, we're at the end of the show today. What are you up to for the rest of the week? Is it busy? Are you? Let me ask you
yes.
this. Before you answer that, are you back to normal with the sleep?
No, I'm not. And I'm really feeling like I've got so much going on right now. So I'm working hard at it, but I'm not being very successful at getting back my sleep pattern. You know, I woke up this morning at, fell asleep at like 10 and woke up this morning at 2 and couldn't go back to sleep. So I'm
wow.
really out of sorts, and I really have to not feel guilty. I'm saying this here for all those people, all of you guys out there who know what it's like to get out of your sleep pattern. So I've got to just really, you know, take care of myself, but I've got a lot going on. We've got this upcoming, conference that we're doing for professionals, and we've got to make sure and get that promoted to everybody so that everyone who, you know, would like an opportunity to attend knows it's available. And I've got my women's program that I've launched just for women on the spectrum. And so I've got to, you know, keep on top of, you know, doing the work I need to for that. So yeah, I'm really needing to be mindful of balancing everything and being careful in regards of, you know, not taking on any more projects right now, just really sticking with what I've got on my plate already. And I'll keep you updated on the whole sleep thing, because I know a lot of our listeners deal with that, either because they have kids on the spectrum who really struggle with that, or they themselves are on the spectrum. And it's just, this is something a lot of us just really struggle with. So I'll keep you up to date. Eli, what have you got going on for your weekend?
You know, I'm going to give a few private lessons this week and continue to put the school supply list together for the local elementary school, and, you know, continue to mentally get myself in a space where I'm comfortable with this next step in my life. And it's something that I am, you know, dealing with. Some days are great, some days are not so great. And, you know, I'm going to utilize my go-to team a little bit more. You know, that means you, Tony, and people who are in my circle to kind of help me get through it, you know, because there have been days where I've kind of struggled a bit to push forward. So I'm going to work on that this week and spend some time with their family and continue to try to be the best version of myself that I can possibly be. So I'll keep the listeners updated on that progress. And with that, folks, that is it for the show. We'd like to thank, once again, Miles Veal for being on the show. Great young man. He's definitely going to make a difference in the world. I'm super proud of all of his success. Great interview today. We'd like to thank all of you for your continued support of the show. We couldn't do this show, and it wouldn't be successful without all of you tuning in each and every week. Get out in your community and make someone or something better. It is pretty easy to do. Put a smile on somebody's face. It doesn't take a lot of energy at all. Until next week, take care. God bless. This has been the Elijah Winfrey Show on blogtalkradio.com. Bye-bye.